Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, we are sitting down with Daniel Kwan, co-host and showrunner of the Asians Represent podcast and a game designer known for his work on Candlekeep Mysteries, Avatar Legends, and more. Today, we are discussing his latest project, Wandering Blades, a role-playing game of violent martial arts melodrama.
Daniel, welcome to the show. Welcome. So good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here.
So, Daniel, we're super excited to have you on today to chat about Wandering Blades. And that, for those who don't know, this is your game that is crowdfunding as people are listening right now. We want to get into things like the inspirations, the mechanics, the crowdfunding journey of it all, working with our friends at Plus One EXP. But where I want to start and where we want to start as kind of the overarching conversation is there, right on the page, you describe this as lethal melodrama in an old school package. So I want to start with a big question of how are you combining the OSR and story game schools of thought in this game?
I love all tabletop RPGs. I've been playing RPGs for like over two decades. My first game was a Powered by the Apocalypse game. In your introduction, I went to work on like D&D. I've worked with like systems of all complexities, but I think for me, my heart is really in sort of that space, kind of that overlap between story games and the OSR. Like, I really love games that are dangerous. I really like games where there are like real, not like real world, but like real consequences to like a character's actions. Mistakes can be sort of like lethal. I also really like a gameplay experience that's open-ended, you know, challenging, but also like supportive of emergent narratives. And that's kind of where the OSR and story games kind of emerge, right? There is more of that sort of like fruitful void. And I really like that. I like that OSR games and story games aren't over-designed. I like that they know exactly what they are, and they are very specific in the experience that they're trying to sort of create on the table. And then on top of that, like, for more of the OSR, I really like that sort of toolbox experience. I really like the idea of like rulings over rules. I like that rules are guidelines. And I love the OSR sort of ethos of like player interpretation, like ingenuity, expansion, hackability. Like, I really like that. And it kind of like taking that story game and OSR approach to this project really made the design experience a lot of fun for me too, because I wasn't thinking of trying to like overly mechanize everything. I had like these core tenets that I wanted to stick to. That's all I was doing.
I know we recently, I really love the phrase fruitful void. I've never heard that in this context, and I'm going to say it all the time now.
Oh, that's like a big game term, Brian.
It's a game term.
I've never heard this. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, it's just the stuff that you leave to the table.
It was a lot of fun to read through this, the quick start for this game, because you get to get all that like juicy, crunchy, like this is the stuff I get to play with in combat. And then you do see that other half of things with the character background of like drive and keepsake. And one of the things I found particularly like highlighted this blend that you've got is like, you learn the basic mechanics of combat, but then it's like the way that you advance as a character is questions about how you engage with these more story elements. And I thought that was like the most like direct in conversation with like a classic like D&D or something, where it's like, no, you're not leveling up because you got XP from killing monsters. It's like the leveling up is about the story. It's about the melodrama. So I thought that was a really fun touch. I didn't have a question there. It was just something I liked.
Oh, no, thank you. No, I really, for me, it was like, When I started working on this, a lot of people were like, oh, what, like, oh, are you going to base it on this Wuxia novel or this web novel or this movie? And, you know, as I did a lot more research and just was diving deep into Wuxia, I realized that there was just like, there's so much variety. You're going to get Wuxia that's just like all romance, and there's going to be some swordplay. But then you're also going to get Wuxia where like limbs are flying. There's like a literal, one of my favorite Wuxia movies is actually a remake of a classic film called Dragon Inn. And Donnie Yen is like the villain, and he plays this like villainous eunuch. And in the final showdown, one of the characters uses a martial arts technique that strips all the flesh from his hand, and it's just a skeleton, and he impales a guy with his bones.
Whoa.
And like, but you're not going to see
slaps.
That. It's so good. It's so good. But, and more people need to watch New Dragon Gate Inn. It's the 1990s remake of Dragon Inn, which is also a good movie. But that is not like Jin Yong's Wuxia. It's not like that heavily melodrama leaning storytelling. It's that violent swordplay storytelling. And so for me, I wanted to make sure that I had combat mechanics that supported this sort of tense back and forth fight between characters, between multiple combatants. But at the same time, because of my sort of OSR inspirations, combat is dangerous. So you're not going to be engaged in combat every single time, every single session, or you might not want to. So, you know, having character advancement be narrative just made the most sense to me, because not everybody's going to want to fight. And that's just not what it's about. Like, you are drawing your blades, you are fighting, you are, you know, killing people for a reason, right? Because these characters have their own sort of like codes, their own like personal codes of like conduct. They're chivalrous in their own ways. And it made no sense to kind of codify advancement to only martial tasks.
I also think that there are, if someone is used to playing story games, they'll be immediately down for this like advancement through roleplay. If someone is used to playing more combat focused games, they're going to get all the combat they want in this game for sure. And now you have a mechanical reason to incentivize them to get into an area that they might not be as comfortable in.
Exactly. There are some other intentional parts of this as well that lean into the story game parts. Like, the first thing you do in this game is you don't pick your class. You actually name your character. And that was actually brought up on a podcast that I was on. And it was called the Character Creation Cast. And we were making characters for Wandering Blades. And the host pointed out that they were kind of shocked that the first thing we did was make character names. And I did that intentionally because, A, I think it's the one thing that scares people the most about a game like this, because they're like, well, what if I'm not Chinese? What do I do? There are guidelines for that in the book. But also when you come up with a character name, it kind of fleshes out the identity of what you're going to be building narratively and mechanically. Right? I had a player, they were like, well, I want to be like an ex-court painter. And I think I'm going to pick like, you know, the scholar class, which is in the court rulebook. And I was like, okay, well, let's think of a name. They were like, well, I don't want to do like a Chinese name. So we were like, well, I was like, well, what if we went with like Red Tail? Because you said that you're like a painter and you use your victim's blood to paint like portraits. And what if like Red Tail was like really cool because, you know, the brush kind of looks like a horse's tail and you use blood. And they were like, oh, that's my character's name. So from there, they like had their keepsake, their drive, their connections. And then they picked sort of like their class abilities around this narrative idea that they had.
That is sick. That is very sick. You get so much from a name that it's like, it is sometimes one of those things where it's like, I feel like I'm like, no, I want to wait to like make my name until I've done all the little bits and bops. But it's like you create a guiding light, which I really like as like a way of starting.
Starting with a name is kind of like calling your shot. It's like, I'm going here. I'm not, this is an emergent narrative. I'm calling where I want to go. And then I'll build towards that.
100%. And then it's on the player to kind of reinforce what they've developed during character creation. If you tell me you're going to be like an artist and you're going to paint with the blood of your victims, how do you get it? Like, what do you do?
There's a word in here that you said, which is wuxia, which people listening might or might not know, but it is core to the kind of storytelling that is at the inspiration for this game. Could you tell us a bit about wuxia and how it informed what the kind of stories people are telling in this game?
Yeah, so wuxia is sort of like a genre of Chinese fiction about the adventures of martial artists. Essentially, they are stories about martial artists, typically in ancient China, though there's actually a fair amount of wuxia cinema that's set in like kind of like contemporary times. But it's stories about martial artists who typically are vagabonds. They're folks who operate outside of the realm of the court. They're people who aren't typically aristocrats or don't have wealth. They're kind of like Robin Hood type characters who, you know, fight for the common people, who, you know, avenge injustice, but they do so through weaponry. And that's typically where you see the sort of like an aesthetic difference between wuxia and like just like martial arts cinema, in that wuxia typically is about sword wielding characters or weapon wielding characters. On top of that, wuxia itself is not typically depicted as like fantasy in a sense. characters can do fantastical things. Like they can, you know, jump really high or walk on water or perform like really, really incredible, seemingly superhuman physical feats. But that's achieved through like inner training. So it's almost like you could call it low fantasy without magic.
There's kind of thinking of a conversation we had recently, which folks will have heard just before this one with Jess Levine. Oh, no, sorry. They won't have heard it yet. It's coming out after this one. I'm spoiler. Getting my release schedule in the head. Spoiler. Spoilers for a conversation that is about to come out on the show. We talked to Jess Levine about adaptational media and like adapting things that you love into games. And Jess said this really interesting thing about like adaptation is you have to love the thing you're adapting, but you also have to have some things you maybe hate about it that you want to like kind of change or bring to the surface. And I'm curious, like, what were the things that you loved about Wuxia that you wanted to represent at the table? And then what are the things that like when people use this game might differ from the inspiration?
I think for me, it's the thing I love most. I think it's really clear in the game. I love like action movies. Like I love the violence. I love the combat. The thing, it's not necessarily something that I hate, but I'm not always in the mood for like intense melodrama. I'm not always in the mood for just having drama be the core part of my game. And so that's why I left something like that to that, like we talked about earlier, that fruitful void, that like that empty space in the design, to allow people, to enable people to do what they want with that space or to not touch it at all. But with the combat, I also wanted to communicate that this is core to my vision of the game. But combat itself also isn't designed to be like overly complex. The thing that was most important to me was this, Tony from Plus One really loved this line when I said it to him, and he put it in everything. I said this when I was talking to Tony about it. I was like, I really want to enable a high time to violence. the idea was like, you know, in sales, there's like time to value. It's like, how fast can you get your customer to see value in your product? For me, it was like, how fast could I enable people to engage in like beautiful, gorgeous violence? And so I wanted to have a system that could support people who weren't familiar with martial arts. So, you know, there are things like parrying and counterattacking, and that's kind of built in rather than narrative. But there are elements of story-leaning games such as like, you know, Popcorn Initiative, but it's player-first Popcorn Initiative. But the combat in the game is very much something that leans heavily on player skill. You can engage in combat and you can get through a round of combat pretty fast. But the more you play, the better you get. The more skillful you as a player get, not just your characters. You learn more about the systems in play and how to manipulate them to meet your end goals.
It is interesting to hear you use the word skill and like bringing in skill into a combat system, because I feel like we've talked to more story game designers recently. And so a lot of the conversations we've had are more towards like focusing on story. And we haven't had a designer talk about like, let's get into the nitty gritty of how you, the player, can get better at this game. I'd love to kind of dive in a little bit more to the mechanics and talk about like how you can build skill in this game and like what the combat system and the mechanical system looks like. Can you give us like a quick primer on what the fighting system is in this game?
Yeah, totally. So fighting system is always player first. So that means the players always go before the GM. Each round of combat is divided into two phases, fast and slow. If you choose to go fast, you get an action and a reaction. If you choose to go slow, you get two actions and a reaction. Simple as that. The GM will always kind of like declare what they're doing first. So the GM might be like, okay, well, I'm going to have these like follower enemies take a fast turn because I want them to just run at the players. But I'll have their sort of leader take a more measured approach. And that's where the narrative kind of like seeps into the flow of combat. It's very intentional. But then the players get to decide, and the players get to like work around each other. Who wants to go first? I'm in the middle of a fight. I might need more actions. I'm going to try to clear out these guys or whatever. And so players are constantly collaborating with one another. And so when the round starts, the players always go first. So the players who chose to go fast go first, then the NPCs. Then the players who chose to go slow go first, and then the NPCs. But the players get to go in any order they want. So they get to react to one another. They get to, in like the video game sense, kind of combo off one another, but also like respond to each other's like successes and failures, right? And because I wanted it to be engaging, I wanted this to have a natural dynamic flow rather than have somebody kind of sit and wait for, like, I'm waiting for my turn to roll my dice. And then once I'm done rolling my dice, I'll wait until my next turn to roll my dice. And so that's how combat works. But there's this added layer of chi, and that's that, like, inner energy that the heroes and villains of the game kind of harness to do things like martial arts techniques or to empower your actions or to even take extra actions. And that's where this idea of skill comes into play. You can play this game and just understand I have an action and I have a reaction. And I'll take my action and my reaction every turn. But then skill comes from familiarity with the system. I am going, and I've had players do this where they're like, I'm going to use my action and I'm going to save my reaction. Or I know Daniel is going to go fast, so I'll go fast with him thinking that I only get one action, but I'll use my reaction to use a chi ability to give myself two actions. And there's this sort of system mastery is kind of what I'm equating to skill, in that you understand how you can manipulate the sort of tempo and flow of combat organically. You can have somebody who has this mastery at the table alongside somebody who doesn't. And the conversation about what everyone is going to do together feels very natural and collaborative.
That's sick. You have one of your influences cited as Ghost of Tsushima.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm feeling this, like, remember, I love that game. It's one of my favorite video games of the last 5 years. And the combat scaling of a video game, that feels very, like, akin to this, of, like, you start out just doing, like, okay, I'm swinging my sword. And then by the end, it's like you're chaining, you're very intentional. Oh, the stances. Yeah, you've
There's
got the stances whole stance
in Wandering
system.
Blades, too.
Exactly.
But you don't have to use them if you don't want to.
Right.
Right. But Ghost of Tsushima is a really good example, actually. I love that game. And really early on, this is something new I actually tried for this because I knew combat would be kind of where I'd be putting the most of my sort of, like, design thinking. I would, like, record my own gameplay or watch high-level gameplay of people who are really good at Ghost of Tsushima. Because as you mentioned, there's, like, a difference. There's, like, people who, like, understand the system, and then there are people who mastered that system. And I would watch video and then break it down frame by frame to see if Wandering Blades would map to Ghost of Tsushima specifically.
Oh, interesting.
Hell yeah.
And so as a part of my process, I would do that. And then I've posted a couple of them on my itch page, kind of breaking down, like, at like, 5 minutes and 12 seconds, this is what it would look like in Wandering Blades, and this is what, you know, Jin Sakai does in Ghost of Tsushima. And so, like, I took, like, calling out inspirations very seriously because I didn't want this. If I was going to say it was inspired by Ghost of Tsushima isn't a wuxia, piece of wuxia fiction. So if I was going to say the combat was inspired by Ghost of Tsushima, it better be inspired by Ghost of Tsushima. Rather than just sort of an aesthetic or, like, a vibe, I wanted it to mechanically play out that way.
And I think you nailed it, because, like, as a fan of that game, like, reading through some of this stuff, I was like, oh, yeah, that, like, that is this, like, parallel, especially the stances, and, yeah, it rules.
No, I appreciate that.
Stances are an element of this game that makes me most think of, like, fighting movies and stuff. It's that moment when, like, two combatants hit, like, smash into each other and then pull back and then they take that new stance and you're like, oh, now they're entering phase two of this battle. That's the thing that most feels like martial arts to me.
I even put in rules for dueling in this. I wanted things to be, like, really straightforward, and I wanted there to be, like, a lot of optional rules, like things you didn't have to engage with. But I think dueling is really cool because you are, when you're dueling somebody, you actually roll opposed intellect checks. And the winner actually decides on the turn order. And the loser actually has to pick their stance first. And so the winner of that round gets to kind of respond to the loser. So you get this, like, inherent advantage going in.
I like that a lot.
I really like that.
That really, that, like, yeah.
It's that cinematic, it's that cinematic language that I'm trying to emulate as well. So it's like, you always get the one character who's like, there was this really good duel in Star Wars Rebels, of all things, where Obi-Wan Kenobi, old Obi-Wan Kenobi, meets Darth Maul on Tatooine. And you actually see Obi-Wan, like, go through all of his different stances, and then Darth Maul responds accordingly, and the duel is over really fast. But I really wanted to emulate that in one particular sort of subsystem or procedure in the game.
That's really sick. I love the attention to detail of how you have abstracted all of these different things in combat. Like, it's like, it's clear that this is, like, such a love letter to combat and violence, like you said, like, in
yeah, love letter to violence.
Yeah, love letter to violence. But it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, I initially, because I'm such a story gamer these days, I initially, like, my player reaction was like, oh, this is a lot of stuff for me to keep track of. I don't know how easy it would be for me to get into this. And then we were looking at the book and found the quick reference, and I read that back over, and I'm like, oh, no, I'm in. I want to do all these things now. I want to choose the things, and I want to do that. I'm curious what tabletop games sort of inspired this combat. Like, are there games that you pulled from and, like, or refined down from? Like, obviously, I think there's some D&D DNA in here, but obviously a lot of stuff pulled out of that, but...
Not as much D&D, actually. In terms of, like, tabletop role-playing games, not much at all. It's actually TCGs that really inspired
this. TCGs, fascinating.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So there is... I had a really hard time during the pandemic. I was kind of like locked up, you know. I was taking care of my family during the pandemic, so I was like taking masking really seriously. Still do. I wasn't really going out or anything like that. And the first thing that I actually started doing to kind of get myself out of the house was going to my LGS and playing cards. And I went to the store near me. It's like a 10-minute walk, and the owner gave me like a free deck for this game called Flesh and Blood. It's a TCG that was designed in New Zealand. And the concept of it is that it is a duel between two characters. And you're actually throwing attacks at one another. And you have equipment. And I got hooked. Like, it's going every week and playing. I still do. And it's been like 2 years. What I love about the game is that you have to decide on, like, tempo is super important. Do I want to block? If I use my cards to block, then that means I have less to clap back with on my turn. And it's this like dance between characters. And I was so deeply inspired by that feeling, that tension of like, oh, do I just take the hit so I could hit back even harder? But if I hit back harder, I have to hit back with a lot of damage. So then they'll block and then we'll go back and forth. Am I going to sacrifice my armor or my equipment to protect myself? I loved that sort of dance that was mechanically reinforced by this card game. And I've really wanted it in a tabletop RPG, but I wanted it to be something that anybody can do or anybody can pick up, but could sort of skill up with, which is why there are all these extra systems that you can engage with.
That's fascinating. That does feel very TCG. I'm not a big like personal TCG, but I watch a lot of friends play them. And that the way you talk about combat in it, now I'm like, the brain blast is connecting. Brian, you're a big Magic guy. I'm sure there's stuff happening in your brain.
Oh yeah, for sure. It is.
It's like, do you swing with everything in Magic or do you wait to block?
That's always because so much of Magic is like, I've got to wait. I've got to worry about the clapback. Like, I got to leave up some blockers. It's always like fits and starts. You're always like testing the waters and trying to get a little bit closer, a little bit closer, a little bit closer until you can make that final swing. It's such a tough thing to emulate in role-playing games because there's just so much variation in what can happen with dice rolls that more often than not, you're going to kill the big bad in a slightly unsatisfying way. But with all the things that you've done with the Wandering Blades, like especially like the reactions and the combat stances, there's so many little cinematic moments that you can have that, dollars to donuts, the big final moment is going to happen during one of those cinema or because of one of those reactions or because you chose a certain combat stance. It's not just going to be like, I do this attack and it happens to kill the guy. Yay.
I had a game I played where one of the players, I got a critical hit on one of the players with my big, big bad. And the player was like, okay, I'm gonna parry. And I was like, okay, you got like a 5% chance. And they rolled a nat 20.
See, those are the moments you live for.
This had been a player who was playing a Wandering Blades game with their home group. And they understood the system. And they were like, I saved my reaction just for this. So I'm going to react. And then they clapped back, and this player rolled another 20, and it was the most epic thing. It was super, super cool. On the note of Magic, there's actually something really different between Magic and like Flesh and Blood. You know, like in Magic, there's always this element of luck. It's like, am I going to draw mana, right? Like I have like my favorite commander deck is my Ur-Dragon deck. It's like a 5-color deck, but like sometimes I'm going to be screwed if I don't have a good mana base. But in Magic, you're like building up to being powerful. In Flesh and Blood, you start with a full deck, you start with full health, you start with all of your armor, and you actually get weaker as the game progresses, which is the opposite of Magic. Magic, the growth results in, like, kind of creates a lot of variability in the gameplay experience, but nothing that is like consistent or like organic. But in Flesh and Blood, like when you are losing, you know why you're losing. In Wandering Blades, when you're winning, you know why you're winning. And when you're on the back foot, you know why you're on the back foot. And it plays out really well narratively too.
That is an interesting thing that in Magic, it's a lot of it is about like the mana curve and like ramping up and getting to a impressive board state or a commanding board state as quickly as possible and pushing from there.
Magic is like showing up to a gunfight and then digging through your pockets for bullets.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah,
that's what Magic
how
is,
quickly
right?
can I load this gun?
How quickly can I load my gun? I'm wearing like cargo pants and I've got bullets in like all of my pockets and I'm trying to find them. That's Magic. It's the first person to get their gun fully loaded and then they just start firing.
Right. And they both have different
guns. Yeah, everybody has got different guns, right? So there is something fun to that. But I think if you're going to create a tabletop RPG, the experience needs to be consistent.
There's an interesting thing that there is like, I play a lot of Commander, which is like a singleton 100 card format.
Me too.
It's great. But there's a banned list in Commander, certain cards that are banned. And I happened to look at it not too long ago, and there were a few cards that were banned because they led to unsatisfying ends of games, like unsatisfying conclusions, which was a great reason to ban a game piece. Like usually it's, this is too powerful, you win too quickly, this is whatever. But to basically say a game piece is boring, so therefore it is banned, is a thing that kind of happens in Magic that I imagine, not knowing Flesh and Blood, sounds like it doesn't happen as much in Flesh and Blood. Like a lot of Magic games kind of have that moment of fizzling out or yeah. like where you're just like, okay, you win, let's scoop yeah. and play again.
Flesh and Blood, things get banned because of how they interact with other cards, because they're too powerful or they don't. One thing that's interesting is that when they ban cards, they actually explain why they ban them and how that aligns with their design philosophy, which is really cool. They're like, these are our four pillars of design and this undermines this pillar, so therefore it is banned.
Hey everybody, this is Brian, and I just want to tell you about a great one-shot actual play we just ran over on My First Dungeon. It's for a new tabletop role-playing game called Mad as Hell, and it's sponsored by our good friends over at Soul Muppet Publishing. Mad as Hell is a new anti-capitalist demon-hunting game where you play as radicals who fight the literal demons of capitalism. But what makes Mad as Hell different is that the demon isn't destroyed when you beat it in a fight. In order to destroy it forever and stop it from coming back, your radicals have to spend time in their community making meaningful social change in order to correct the root of the injustice that created the demon in the first place. So if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, check out our actual play one-shot of Mad as Hell over on My First Dungeon. And if you like what you hear, Mad as Hell is currently crowdfunding over on Kickstarter. So go and support some of our favorite people making some of our favorite games.
The Badlands. Legend has it that beneath the dust, something old and powerful still whispers to any gunslinger foolish enough to listen. One day, aboard a doomed train into the wastes, three unlucky travelers hear that call. A runaway socialite, a shape-shifting bounty hunter, and a retired thief turned family man. Will our outcasts find what they're looking for?
I mean, we're already here. Let's have a little fun.
You really went in there, guns blazing.
I thought that was the plan.
My potions are miraculous.
I thought we were being quiet.
Oh, Stump only has one volume. Sorry.
Wild roses grow out of his mouth, having filled his lungs.
What's happening out there?
Violence.
Find out on Mage Hand High Five.
This actually connects really well to what I wanted to get into, because the idea of banning cards in Magic is like a refining of the play and the feel. And I feel like reading through this game and talking about things like system mastery, you have to have dialed in these numbers and these abilities and stuff like this. What I want to pull out a little bit from the details of the game and talk a little bit about like the journey of making this game. Like, how long have you been making Wandering Blades, and like how much play testing has gotten you to this like really refined, tight, crunchy system.
It's so funny because a lot of the... I've been joking with myself that Wandering Blades is, the combat system specifically, is totally enough to systematize playing with action figures.
Cool.
It's that like experience of like holding two toys and be like, I do this and then I do this. For me, like the design process, it's been about 2 years. So I originally was writing a more like sort of like a Shinsha style campaign setting for D&D. I was originally writing that and I was like deep into writing it. And then the whole OGL thing happened in 2023. And I was kind of like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. And so I like hard pivoted. I discovered this Chinese comic called Biaoren Blades of the Guardians. And it blew my mind. It's like, it's not specifically Wuxia, but it's got a lot of the same vibes. And I remember reading it and becoming absolutely obsessed and thinking, well, how can I take what I've already worked on and then make it into something of my own? And then that's kind of where Wandering Blades came from. And around the same time, I was getting more and more into Flesh and Blood. And then I thought, I'm going to make an action movie generator. And that's exactly what happened. The design process was really fun. Did a lot of play testing. A lot of it also with like, you know, sitting at my desk, literally taking miniatures and be like, how would this work out? But then also thinking, how would it work out in Theater of Mind? I actually designed a lot of it like in like a notebook, like a physical notebook. I actually wrote out, I guess this is just for you folks, but I actually wrote out a combat scenario of like, okay, what happens if somebody did this? I would want to do that.
Just for the listener, it's literally like boxes of text with arrows drawn in almost like this flow chart way.
Yeah, it's like a flow chart with, and it's color coded with like different system elements. And so what I would do was I would basically run myself through these scenarios. How would a seasoned martial artist respond to this? Or I would watch movies or I would play video games like Ghost of Tsushima. And I would see what elements of these experiences do I want to emulate in my game. And then I would just work through and iterate on this combat system. Because I knew that I could design procedures for other aspects of the game, like exploration or downtime. And all of those were inspired by sort of other genre tropes as well. And then I've been watching action and wuxia movies every Sunday for like a year, taking notes on different movies and what elements I'd like to take from them, what resonated with me, and then trying to include them in the game.
That's sick. That detail of finding the high-level Ghost of Tsushima play and slowing it down and lining it up is just like, that's cool as hell.
Yeah, and it was like gameplay that I could never emulate on my own like game.
Yeah.
I originally tried to do Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
But I found that Sekiro was too single-player focused of an experience. And that
and specifically really powerful enemies. Yeah,
very powerful enemies. And the poise mechanic of Sekiro and breaking through somebody's guard was a level of crunch that I didn't want to have in this game. And so I ended up shifting more towards Ghost of Tsushima.
I'm curious, as you were refining this game through the playtesting process and over the past 2 years, what were the elements of the game that changed the most from where you started?
When I first started, I originally had a ton of different classes. I had a ton of different classes, and I ended up just like realizing organically that I really only needed three, and I wanted to add a lot of build variety to each one. So instead of having, you know, 5 to 8 classes, I ended up with 3 classes where you could have a completely different, like you could have a party where everybody's playing those classes and all the characters are like very distinct from one another. Like not only in their class features, but also some like the Yosha class literally has their own martial arts style. They have their own techniques that influence how they actually like engage in combat, but also like the weapons that you pick, your drives, the narrative aspects of your characters, like all make them so distinct from one another. And I really early on kind of sat myself down and decided on how long I wanted the play experience to be as well. And that was something early on that really changed. I think everybody, when they start designing a game, especially like a big, big game, they're like, well, I want to have like D&D. It's going to be 20 levels worth of class features and all of this stuff. But I decided that I only wanted to have 5 levels because I only wanted people to play a character for 5 sessions at most. And that really helped guide the type of design I was doing. If I was going to make a lethal game, why have 20 levels of character options when a character can die in any encounter? Didn't make sense. It would feel like a waste of like space on the page, but at the same time, it would create, there was a misalignment in expectations of the experience. How can a game be hyper-lethal for both the players and their enemies, but also allow for insane scaling? And so one of the things that changed really dramatically in the beginning was kind of like how long I expected people to play this game. And then as I was going, I was slowly and slowly refining the combat mechanics, like how movement looked like, what damage looked like, and things like that. But I had a really clear vision at the very start, so I didn't change anything particularly dramatically. Like the Wandering Blades you see now is very much the vision that I had from the very start, which I think is important to do, like just to sit down and decide, what do I want the core tenets of my game to be? What do I want the experience to be? And then just keep refining it.
I feel like maybe I've just noticed it more lately, or maybe it is more of a thing of games having a, putting more emphasis on getting to an ending and like having shorter, like not expecting you to play it for years and years and years and just eventually have the game fizzle out, as happens in so many D&D campaigns. But I do really like that more and more games are looking at, let's tell a satisfying story in its completion, in its entirety. Let's have the full narrative arc rather than just let's progress and progress and progress. And, you know, the line always goes up and to the right.
And simultaneously, you have this principle at the top of the game of talking about a toolbox experience where you're like, where it's very much like, take what you want, leave what you don't. And so, you know, I'm sure there will be a table that picks up Wandering Blades and is like, we're going to keep this going. Even if we stay at level 5, we're going to play this game for, you know, 100 sessions. And that's great. And that's kind of part of it.
Yeah. Go for it. Yeah, totally.
I want to talk about, because we've got the quick start here and people can go grab the quick start right now while the game is funding. What can we start getting excited about with the full game that is crowdfunding right now? What's coming? What's the full book going to look like? How is it different from the quick start? What can we start to kind of get excited about having in our hands when we have the full thing?
Yeah, the full book's going to have one additional class, the Scholar. The Scholar lets you be like have like a vocation, so you can be either a physician, so you can do pressure point attacks. It lets you actually, it adds another layer to the combat mechanics because it lets you manipulate chi. So you can actually transfer chi from yourself to others, which adds like a really cool strategic layer. You can attack pressure points. There's also a detective class, the detective vocation, sorry, I should say, for the Scholar. And it is, in its truest sense, like a support class. If you want to be if you want to lean heavy into the story game, the mystery genre, like there is an entire class that's just for that. And in combat, they can sort of like provide allies with bonuses or even identify weaknesses. The detective is the only class that lets you force the GM to tell you a mechanical detail about an NPC. Like, I want to know what that technique is. Tell me how it works. Because that also emulates the genre trope of like, oh, I recognize that technique or I recognize their weapon.
Right. I've studied this.
Exactly. So there's like a whole other class. There's going to be a new core adventure. It's very different than the adventure that's in the quick start. The core adventure is going to feature like both an isometric and top-down maps of a frontier roadhouse. And I'm framing it as an adventure sandbox rather than a linear adventure. Because I want it to align with my vision of like replayability and, you know, quick sessions or like, you know, only 5 levels of characters. You could use this roadhouse on the frontier of northwestern China for any sort of story you want. You can insert it into the middle of an adventure, like a long-term one. You can start your adventure there. If you go to cons, this is what you could use. And it's got all sorts of factions, NPCs, plot hooks, day and night events to kind of, again, give you that toolbox from which to tell your own stories. And I've run that adventure in every single playtest I've done, and every single one has been different. There are expanded rules for combat, added weapons, also martial arts manuals. I was really inspired by Ghost of Tsushima, actually, in how you get new techniques and stuff like that, and you have to go through these trials to get them. And so I was like, oh, martial arts manuals would be awesome. And there are going to be martial arts manuals in the game where you actually have to sacrifice, or at least weigh, whether or not you want to advance your character or learn a new technique. Because in order to unlock martial arts techniques through these manuals, you have to spend XP. So it's either I level up or I get this really cool, powerful technique that I can't use as much. So it's adding a little bit of, I guess, vertical and horizontal depth to the game. I don't know if that makes sense. On top of that, there are going to be like expanded adversaries, an entire section on how to name Chinese characters that's expanded, but also a whole section on like the genre of wuxia. What are the common tropes? What are best practices for running wandering blades? How do you tell chivalrous martial arts stories using this system? So it's going to have even more support for people who are into martial arts or into action, but want to explore wuxia as a genre.
I do want to pull out of there something that you mentioned earlier and you brought up again now, which is having guidance on naming characters. And specifically, like if someone plays this game and they're not Chinese, there's some guidance for that. Can we just talk through kind of what that is for like folks? Because like I imagine obviously you want this to capture a wide swath of players and like not have that moment where people are like, oh, I don't feel like I can bring this game to the table.
Yeah, so the character, so I had one of my collaborators works in like Chinese game localization. And so help me out with this section. And it essentially gives you like a detailed breakdown of how to do given names, family names, courtesy names, and nicknames. So the rules don't explicitly state that you need any one of those. Like, don't think that you have to have a, you know, family name, given name, a courtesy name, and a nickname. No, here's what we mean by family name. Here's what we mean by given name. This is what a courtesy name is. There are tables that you can roll to like pick one at random. Or if you're worried, you can go with a nickname, because this is something that you see in a lot of wuxia fiction. And they're usually English names. Like one of the most influential wuxia movies of all time is called Come Drink With Me. And it came out in 1966. And the main character, her name is just Golden Swallow. And it's super cool. And the other protagonist, his name is Drunken Cat. Like there's in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, there's a character called Dark Cloud, right? And which is why I want people to name their characters first. And so I've provided more guidance on how to do that in this game through like random tables you could roll, but also just like cultural context behind what Chinese names even are. Because I don't think that most folks even know the importance of a nickname in Chinese culture or what a courtesy name is if your character has like a background in academia or comes from a well-off family.
Fascinating. I love that. Yeah, it feels like, I mean, this is obviously our hobby has like some troubled history with Orientalist games. And it feels like this is the level of attention to detail and care you get when like someone has a connection to the culture that they bring to the creation of this game. So I really love that.
Yeah, this isn't a game that's just for Chinese people. This is a game for like anybody who wants to engage with this genre of Chinese fiction.
Yeah.
Right. And if you speak Chinese or if you're familiar with like the genre, you don't have to touch this material at all. But if you're brand new, that's what this is for. And again, that's like that toolbox experience. Same thing with like, you know, there are going to be rules for exploration. If you're not into sort of exploration from like an OSR sort of sense, don't engage with it. And that's not to say like, don't play my game. It's to say, play my game the way you want to play it. And I think that's the beauty of tabletop role-playing games, but also the challenge of designing one. There is like this balance that has to be struck between providing a core experience, but also allowing for and accommodating player choice and the freedom of sort of play style.
I think I want to make sure we get in this interview, because I think if people are listening to this and aren't already excited about this game, go read the quick start, because it's really fucking cool.
Thank you.
But you've mentioned a lot of wuxia movies and comics, and you said you've been watching movies for the past like year, once every week.
Yeah.
For someone who, if you've never watched one, can you give us like a top three where people should dive in to kind of draw some inspirations for playing this game?
Okay, so if it's a movie, you have to watch Come Drink With Me, Dragon Inn, or New Dragon Gate Inn. That's like a 90s remake of it. There was a movie that, if you're not into like old movies, there's a really interesting one that came out last year. I think it's the best action movie of 2024. And it's called Twilight of the Warriors Walled In. And it's based on like a Chinese Wuxia comic, but it's set in the 1980s in the Kowloon Walled City in Hong Kong. So imagine that sort of Wuxia style combat where like a guy can deflect blades with his bare skin. And they're doing like that wire fu style sword fighting, but inside the cramped claustrophobic alleyways of the Kowloon Walled City in the 80s. It is extremely cool.
That's giving really fucking sick.
It's really giving me like the Daredevil fight scene vibes.
Oh, 100%.
But for a whole movie.
But within Wuxia, it's so cool. Yeah. I definitely recommend those three movies. You're going to get like a wide variety. If you want something super artsy, and I'm trying to think of things that are accessible, there's a movie called Shadow. Came out in 2018, and it is got one of the coolest duels I've ever seen. There's a whole faction within this Wuxia movie, and they wield bladed umbrellas, and they spin them, yeah. And then they throw blades. It's so cool.
I think I've seen that fight clip, because that sounds very familiar.
It's so cool. If you're into like mysteries, there is a movie called Dragon. In some regions, it's literally just called Wuxia, starring Donnie Yen. And it's set in like the early 20th century. And it's about this detective from like, you know, the big city who comes into a rural village to investigate these murders that are tied to this like, you know, loner played by Donnie Yen. It's very cool.
Hell yeah.
Some good recommendations.
That's a good list. I'm already like, oh, I got to figure out a time to watch them.
If you want to know like the vibe that, so those are like the genre things I would pick. If you want to think about like how I envision combat, there are a couple of non-Chinese things I would also recommend in terms of pacing and drama. There's an incredible animated movie called Sword of the Stranger that came out in the early 2000s, set in Japan. It's kind of got like a lone wolf and cub sort of scenario where Chinese characters actually play as the villains, but it's got incredible action. Same with another anime, one of my favorites of all time, Samurai Champloo.
Yeah.
I loved the pacing of it, the vibes, the character dynamics were really cool to me. And then for video games, obviously Ghost of Tsushima was a huge inspiration for the combat, but there's a video game that's coming out that I highly recommend people look at. There's at least 50 minutes of gameplay footage online as of the time of recording. It's called Project the Perceiver. Imagine if you took like gritty Wuxia and then you combined it with Ghost of Tsushima from a Chinese studio, and it looks fucking incredible. And then lastly for comics, Blades of the Guardians. That's so good. There was also an animated adaptation that you can watch for free on YouTube.
See, now we have a problem because we've given people too many recommendations and now they're going to go watch all those and it's going to take them longer to... So listen, watch one or two of those, then stop, then back the Kickstarter, then go do all the other
now back the Kickstarter
movies.
And then go and watch
back
all
the
of that stuff.
Excuse me. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, because if you back the Kickstarter, then we can make this a reality and then you can start preparing by watching all
there
of
you
stuff.
There you go.
Real quick, I don't think we hit before we bring you to a close. Where are you funding? How long are you funding? And like, what can people get if they back this project?
Yeah, so we are funding on Kickstarter. You can just go to wanderingblades.com. It'll redirect you to the campaign. We're funding for the entire month of May. With this, you can get, you know, a PDF. You can get a physical copy. You can even get a session with me if you want. There's even our highest tier. You'll get a bespoke piece of content that I'll design for you using Wandering Blades. I have some ideas. Like, I want to write like a Sailor Moon hack of Wandering Blades.
Hell yeah.
Because all the magical girl characters have their own techniques. I want to do like an Elden Ring hack of Wandering Blades. I've got so many ideas. There's also some add-ons, and there's also a tier where you can get like acrylic standees of like Wuxia characters. So you can have characters that you could use.
For the listening audience, Daniel just held up a very cool little acrylic standee.
Yeah, I've got like a whole set of like all of the core like characters
that you
could see on the Kickstarter campaign. There's going to be five in total. So if you want to have like Asian representation on your tabletop, with something that's portable and affordable, we're also doing those. We've also got, we've also got a really cool stretch goal, and we've got two zines that are going to be part of it. One is going to be a collection of essays about Wuxia cinema.
That's cool.
The accessibility of like physical media, like the genre. And then another is going to be a collection of like supplemental rules, like alternative class options, adversaries, weapons, and even if we fund extra classes. So there's going to be two extra classes if we hit that stretch goal.
I'm excited about the essays more than anything.
Me too. It's going to be super cool. We have one guy writing about like physical media and like iconic wuxia films and how to watch them. And we've got another on like the sort of cultural elements that are unique to wuxia. So think of them as like additional materials to help you play the game better.
And then the other piece of this campaign is that you're working with our friends at +20XP, Tony Vicinda. Yeah. I'm curious kind of what working with them, like how that has kind of helped this game come to life.
It's so funny because like when I was working on Wandering Blades before I met Tony. I met Tony at Big Bad Con in like 2023. And Tony was in like the vendor hall and he was trying to sell a zine to like one of like the convention attendees, and he's trying to explain like the person was asking like what is like the OSR, and I kind of like stepped in and I explained it to them, and they were like, oh, this is awesome, and then they ended up buying the thing from the booth, and then Tony and I started hitting it off, and we were talking about like what we like about games and values and like the industry. And so when I started seriously working on Wandering Blades and being like, oh my god, this is something that I want to be a reality, I started thinking about publishers, and Tony left a really good first impression on me. And so I reached out to him and he was like, yeah, let's do this. But he also said like, look, I'm not Chinese. I won't tell you how to make your game, but I will support you in any way that you need. So like, you know, marketing, crowdfunding logistics and all of that. And so I have like complete creative control and ownership over Wandering Blades, and +20 is there to kind of support making this a reality, which I think is like very important to me.
It's exactly what you want from a publisher. Just like, here's the thing I want to make. Let me help you make it.
Exactly. It has been like a wonderful experience. And like and Tony also said, you know, before we even do Wandering Blades, let's try something smaller. And so we took one of my early solo games, like a Wretched and Alone hack, and we put it into print just to kind of see how it would work. And it was a great experience working with Tony.
Shout out, Tony.
Yeah, shout out to Tony.
Shout out, Tony. So, Daniel, as we move this conversation to a close, we have one question that we ask everyone who comes on the show, and that question is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking you for a recommendation of anything. It could be a game, a show, a resource.
Even though you've already given us tons of good ones.
So many.
You've given us so much wuxia, but is there anything else you'd like to recommend to our audience that they might not know about?
Okay, so here's what I'll bring to the table. I'll bring a piece of advice to anybody who's like who is a game designer or wants to be a game designer or has got a project. The one thing that I learned with Wandering Blades is that it is so important to step outside of your comfort zone. I think when people design tabletop RPGs, they think, well, I have to, you know, look at other RPGs, and they don't look at things like board games or card games. I think it was so important for me as a designer to really step outside of my comfort zone and be a learner again. Right? Like, I've been playing Magic for like decades, but learning a new TCG in a brand new environment, experiencing that discomfort and learning mechanics was so valuable for me, because it really sort of like started a fire in me. Like, I've really wanted to learn. I really wanted to become like a master of this game. And in learning a new game, it exposed me to like all these different ideas, all these like the ways in which people like play games that like I would not have gotten Wandering Blades to the point it is now if not for stepping outside my comfort zone and playing something that wasn't a TTRPG.
That's a great piece of advice. Yeah.
Right? Like, if you're designing like a crunchy game, go and play a war game.
Yeah.
Like, try playing a war game, or try seeing like what sort of narrative skirmish games exist. Right? There's some really cool hybrid stuff, like Rangers of Shadowdeep is so cool. It's like a miniatures game. It's a skirmish game, but it is purely, it's like a narrative game. It's a campaign. And there's like elements of an RPG in it that I think are really cool. But you don't get to see all these new ideas or get inspiration from, you know, other sort of game genres if you don't actually actively engage with them. It's so easy to kind of get lost in just like your little bubble of games.
This is good advice.
That's good advice.
We've never had someone bring advice to the table, and I really like it. I'm going to start adding it to our little list of options.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
I mean, I spouted off like 10 different pieces of Wuxia media, so I'm like, okay, let's change it up.
Let's mix it up.
Let's mix it up. But yeah, seriously, though, I think people should go and like go play games. Like, just go play games for the sake of playing games. Like, I think we get so caught up in designing or trying to, and I say this as somebody who's got a Kickstarter right now, you know, trying to monetize our hobbies. And I think it's so important for us as designers to also just have things that we just play for fun. Because if we're not playing games for fun, how are we going to design games that are fun for people?
Thank you so much, Daniel Kwan, for coming on Talk of the Table. Do you want to let our audience know where they can find you online if they're looking for you? And one more time, where they can find Wandering Blades and support it right now.
Yeah, you can find me mostly on Blue Sky now, at Daniel H. Kwan. That's Daniel H-K-W-A-N. From there, you'll find all of my links. You can back Wandering Blades on Kickstarter at wanderingblades.com.
Get in there. Help us get those stretch goals. I want to read those essays. This is a cool project.
Oh, I'm so hyped.
And then go watch a couple of movies.
And then, go watch a couple of movies. So many movies.
You can watch them after you back. And if you want more gaming content from us here at Talk of the Table, you can sign up for the Many Sided newsletter or join us over on the Many Sided Media Discord, where you can chat about this and all of our episodes. You can support Talk of the Table on the Many Sided Media Patreon, where you get bonus episodes, ad-free episodes, and a whole bunch of other fun content. Really helps us make the show. Please rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Ooh, that's a good ending. That's so good.
We're going to keep you saying, ending.
Yeah. Keep that.
Keep that.
And then now we've got to also keep this part of me explaining that we're going to keep it in. And now we've got to keep this part of
me explaining. That's for the patrons. Behind the scenes.
We're just going to keep going. It's going to slowly fade out. Now we're just fading out a little bit.
How are you getting all these sound bites that you can use?
Who knows? We can stop at any of these times.